Sound and data.
Hello, everyone. I haven't been doing this for a while, so I thought I would take a minute to do this new thing that I just discovered. I had written a large taxonomy after working with Roger Molina and the Art Science Lab at UT Dallas over a number of years, and I fed the entire taxonomy and some other documents, including our business plan and stuff like that, into this Google Notebook LM. And it has a button on it once you upload your links to your Google Docs that you can have it generate a podcast. And it does it automatically, just like there was no adjustments or anything I did. I just like did it, and that's what I got. And it came out with this entire, like, I mean, you're not going to believe it when you listen to it. It's entirely generated by AI, and it's a breakdown of all of our research over many years of the different types of sonification, but told in a way that feels like it's just like a normal podcast. I hope you enjoy it. It was a very strange thing, kind of like, let's face it, incredibly spooky. Okay.
Sound and data.
Okay, so you sent over a whole pile of stuff about sonification, research papers, presentations, even what looks like a business proposal.
Yeah.
It's all about turning data into sound, right?
Right.
I have to admit, I'm pretty hooked on the idea already. Yeah. It's like, instead of just staring at charts, we could be listening for insights.
It really is a fascinating new way to engage with information.
Yeah.
You know, we're so used to relying on our vision, but our auditory system has this incredible ability to pick up on patterns, changes, even anomalies that might be hidden visually.
That's what's so intriguing to me, is like sonification could unlock a whole new level of understanding that's just beyond our visual capacity. But is this just like a cool party trick, or can we actually use listening to data to do real work?
It's definitely not just a gimmick. Yeah. We're already surrounded by basic forms of sonification.
Okay.
Think about the distinct click of a Geiger counter.
Right.
Signaling the presence of radiation.
Right.
Or even the troubling squeal of tires at a busy intersection, telling us about friction and potential danger. These everyday sounds are conveying data, influencing our decisions.
Okay, that's a really good point. We're already subconsciously using sound to interpret the world around us.
Yeah.
But the sources you sent go way beyond those basic examples. There was this incredible story about NASA using sonification during the Voyager mission.
Ah, yes. That's a classic example of how sonification can reveal what visual data can't.
Right.
The Voyager team was receiving this confusing, noisy data. They couldn't figure out what it meant just by looking at it.
Right.
But when they decided to listen to the data...
Wait, they listened to it?
Yeah.
They plugged it into a speaker?
Exactly. They used sonification to convert the data into audible sound waves. And what they heard was astonishing. It was a distinct machine-gunning sound that immediately caught their attention.
Okay, that's seriously cool. What did that sound tell them?
It turns out that Voyager was colliding with high-speed micrometeoroids.
Oh, wow.
These tiny particles were hitting the spacecraft at incredible speeds, creating vibrations that showed up as noise in the data. It was only through sonification that they were able to identify the problem.
That's amazing. So sonification isn't just about making data more interesting. It can actually be crucial for problem solving and decision making.
Exactly.
But I'm noticing there are a lot of different approaches to sonification.
Yeah.
It's not just one thing, right?
You're absolutely right. Sonification is a diverse field with a range of techniques for transforming data into sound. It's still a relatively young field, so we're still figuring out the best ways to classify and use these different techniques.
So it's like a new language and we're still writing the dictionary.
Exactly. But we can start by looking at three core techniques. Think of them as the building blocks of sonification: audification, sequential sonification, and second-order sonification.
Okay, I'm ready to unpack those. Let's start with audification. What's that all about?
Audification is the most direct approach. Imagine taking raw data and plugging it directly into a speaker.
Okay.
You're essentially turning numbers into sound waves.
Yeah.
It's a form of analog conversion, translating data into its sonic equivalent.
So it's like listening to the raw data itself. Would it sound like, I don't know, random noise?
It can sound like noise at first, but there's a method to the madness. Think about a mechanic using a screwdriver to listen to an engine.
Right.
They're not just hearing random sounds. They're listening for specific patterns, rhythms, and anomalies that tell them how the engine is running.
Okay, so it's about training your ear to find meaning in the sounds.
Yeah.
It's not always about making a melody. It's about making the data audible.
Precisely. And there are tools to help us interpret these sounds.
Okay.
For instance, there's a program called S-Direct Audification that allows users to listen to changes in fMRI brain scan data in real time.
Wow, you could listen to the brain working. That's mind-blowing. But it also sounds incredibly complex. How do you even begin to interpret those sounds?
That's where the challenges of audification come in. You need to find ways to scale the data into audible ranges. And you need expertise to make sense of the subtle sonic changes.
Okay.
This is where sequential sonification, our next technique, offers a different approach.
All right, let's dive into sequential sonification. How does this one work?
Instead of directly converting data, sequential sonification maps data values to musical parameters.
Okay.
This often involves digital synthesis, using technology to create and control sound.
Right.
Think pitch, duration, rhythm. Those are your building blocks. So instead of hearing raw data, you might hear a rising pitch representing increasing temperature or a faster tempo indicating a stock price surge.
So you're imposing some musicality onto the data to make it more interpretable, more pattern.
Yes. And a great example of this is Charles Dodge's Earth's Magnetic Field.
Oh.
He took data from Earth's magnetic field and used it to create a musical composition. It's an early example of turning data into an artistic yet informative experience.
That's fascinating. But this brings up a question. Does adding a musical layer actually help or hinder our understanding? Is it art or is it science? I imagine there are different schools of thought on this.
You're right. There's a big debate about that in the sonification world. Some argue that turning data into music makes it more engaging, but risks obscuring the data's true meaning.
Because we might get caught up in the emotion of the music and miss the subtle details in the data.
Exactly. Carlos Scaletti, a pioneer in sonification, argues that sonification should prioritize clarity and insight over emotional impact. She believes those goals are better served when sonification is distinct from music.
Okay, so it's about finding that balance between engagement and accuracy. But even if we're not creating full-fledged music, our brains are still wired to respond to those musical elements, right?
Absolutely. Even subtle changes in pitch or rhythm can dramatically alter our perception. Think about earcons. Short, distinctive sound patterns that can represent specific events. You might have one earcon for a stock price hitting a certain threshold or another for an incoming message on your phone. These are like sonic signposts that grab our attention.
So we're leveraging our innate musicality to make sense of the data. We're turning data points into something our brains are pre-wired to understand, patterns and relationships. Okay, we've covered audification and sequential sonification. That brings us to the third technique. Second-order sonification. What makes this one different?
With second-order sonification, we step away from simply representing data points and move towards creating interactive sound worlds.
Interactive sound world. Okay, now you're just making me want to play a video game. But seriously, what does that even mean in the context of data?
Think of it this way.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine data controlling the parameters of a virtual instrument or even an entire soundscape.
Okay.
Instead of listening to a predetermined melody, you're interacting with a dynamic sonic environment that's shaped by the data in real time.
So it's like the data is no longer just a score, it's the conductor of an entire orchestra. What would that sound like in practice? Do the sources give us any real-world examples?
There are some incredible examples out there. For instance, there's a project called Stethox that lets users explore brain scan data in a completely new way. Imagine looking at a Circo's diagram. That's a circular visualization of data, and being able to interact with it sonically.
Wait, so you're not just seeing the brain data, you're hearing it too. How does that even work?
Stethox uses a range of sonification algorithms that translate different aspects of the brain scan data into sound.
Okay.
You can choose from 5 different algorithms, each offering a unique sonic perspective on the data. As you move through the Circo's diagram, the sounds change, revealing patterns and relationships that might not be apparent visually.
That's amazing. It's like you're conducting your own brain symphony.
Wow.
It reminds me of that other project mentioned in the sources, the Texas Gong Project.
Yeah.
That one sounded really interesting.
Yes. That's a great example of how second-order sonification can make data both informative and engaging. They took a map of Texas and turned it into a giant playable gong.
Really?
The different regions of the map are mapped to different frequencies, so as you strike the gong...
You're telling me I can drum on a map of Texas.
You got it. And depending on where you strike, you hear a different sound based on the geographical features of that region. High elevation areas might produce a high-pitched tone, while coastal regions might generate a low rumble.
That is so cool. It's like turning data into a musical instrument that anyone can play. The sources also mention a 3D model of the brain that uses a similar concept, right?
Yes. With this model, users can put on a VR headset and fly through a 3D representation of brain systems. As you navigate through this virtual brain, you can hear the activity of different neural pathways. The sound changes based on your position, giving you a real-time sonic experience of brain activity.
It's incredible to think we can now explore these incredibly complex systems, the brain, an entire state through sound. It's not just about crunching numbers anymore. It's about immersing ourselves in the data.
Exactly. And these three techniques, audification, sequential sonification, and second-order sonification, aren't mutually exclusive either. They represent a spectrum of approaches that can be combined and adapted to fit different purposes.
Right.
In fact, the sources talk about three broad categories of sonification intentions: pattern creation, search and discovery, and monitoring.
Okay, so it's not just about how we turn data into sound. It's also about why. What's the goal? What are we trying to achieve?
Precisely. Pattern creation focuses on the aesthetic potential of sonification. It's about using data to generate interesting sound patterns and explore the creative possibilities of sound.
So it's less about extracting concrete information and more about using data as a springboard for sonic exploration. I like that. It speaks to the artistic side of things. What about search and discovery?
This is where sonification becomes a tool for analysis.
Okay.
Imagine using your ears to sift through massive data sets, listening for anomalies, patterns, or changes that might not be visible in traditional graphs or charts.
It's like you're a sonic detective, using your ears to uncover clues hidden within the data.
Exactly. Think of it as the form of data mining, but instead of using algorithms, we're using our own auditory system to detect subtle but significant signals.
That's incredible. And finally, we have monitoring. This one seems pretty self-explanatory.
It is, in a way. Monitoring is about using sound to track changes in a system over time. It's like listening to the heartbeat of a machine, a network, or even an entire ecosystem.
So instead of just looking at a dashboard of numbers, you're listening for changes in the sonic landscape.
Right.
It's like having a sixth sense that alerts you to subtle shifts in potential problems.
Exactly. And what's fascinating is that these three intentions, pattern creation, search and discovery, and monitoring, can be applied across any of the three sonification techniques we discussed earlier. It's a matrix of possibilities, with each combination offering a unique way to engage with data through sound.
Okay, so we have our sonic toolkit with different techniques and intentions, but there's one more concept mentioned in the sources that I'm dying to talk about. Exformation. You're telling me that sometimes not changing the sound is the most effective way to convey information.
Right.
It sounds counterintuitive.
It might seem counterintuitive, but that's what makes exformation so fascinating. It's a form of signal processing, where instead of drastically altering a sound, we're making subtle, data-driven changes to a familiar sonic source.
Okay, walk me through this. How does it actually work? Give me an example.
Imagine listening to your favorite song, but the music is subtly modulated by real-time data. Maybe the pitch shifts slightly higher or lower depending on the stock market, or the reverb increases as traffic volume rises.
So you're embedding information within a familiar soundscape, like hiding a secret message within a song.
You could say that. And the beauty of it is that our brains are wired to notice subtle changes in our environment. Think about it. We're constantly attuned to anomalies in sound.
Right.
A sudden creak in the floorboards, a change in someone's tone of voice. These subtle shifts grab our attention.
Because they might signal something important even if we don't consciously register it.
Exactly. Exformation plays on that innate human ability to detect deviations from the norm. It's like the old Victor Hugo quote, "Music expresses that which cannot be said and on which it is impossible to be silent." Sometimes the most powerful message is conveyed through what's not explicitly stated.
Okay, that's a really cool way to think about it. Yeah. It's like the absence of sound or the change in a familiar sound can speak volumes. The sources mentioned an example using a Ramones song, right?
Yes. In this example, they used "I Want to Be Sedated" by the Ramones as the familiar sound source. But here's the twist. The sound is filtered in real time based on brain scan data.
Right.
So you're listening to the Ramones, but the sonic texture of the music is subtly shifting and changing in response to someone's brain activity.
That's wild. So it's like you're experiencing two things at once. The familiarity of the song and this hidden layer of information embedded within the music. It's like a sonic Easter egg hunt for your brain.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
But here's another twist that the sources bring up. What if we challenge the traditional definition of sonification as being exclusively about non-speech audio?
Mm.
What if words themselves could become part of the sonic palette?
Wait, you mean actually incorporating spoken words into the mix?
Yeah.
So it's not just beeps and boops. Tell me more. So we're talking about adding spoken words into sonification. It's like we're blurring the lines between data, music, and language. I have to admit, this is blowing my mind a little bit.
It's definitely a fascinating frontier in sonification research. Traditionally, the focus has been on using non-speech sounds to represent data. But there's a growing recognition that words can play a valuable role in enhancing clarity and understanding.
I can see that. Sometimes a simple label or explanation can make all the difference in helping us grasp a complex concept. But how does this wordification, as the sources call it, actually work in practice?
Think about how we use words to clarify visual information.
Right.
We label charts and graphs, add captions to images. Words provide context and guide our interpretation.
Right.
The same principle applies to sound.
So instead of just hearing a bunch of beeps and boops, we might hear a voice saying, temperature rising or stock price dropping. It's like having a narrator guide us through the data.
Exactly. And there's a lot of research to support the idea that adding a verbal layer can significantly enhance cognitive efficiency. Our brains are wired for language, and words can help us process and remember information more effectively, especially in complex or unfamiliar situations.
It's like those moments when you're listening to a piece of music and suddenly a voice enters, adding a whole new layer of meaning and emotion.
Yes. And just like with music, the way we use words in sonification can range from purely functional to highly expressive. We can use words to label data points, provide instructions, tell stories, or even evoke emotional responses.
It's amazing to think we can now use our voices to shape and interact with data. It's like the world is becoming one giant instrument and we're all conductors. But the sources point out that this idea of using sound as input goes way beyond just wordification, right?
Absolutely. Wordification is just one facet of this broader concept.
Yeah.
Sound as input is about exploring the full potential of sound to control and manipulate our digital environment.
Okay, so we're not just passively listening to data, we're actively shaping it with our voices and sounds. Give me some examples. How is this actually being used?
One really cool example is in the field of prosthetic limbs.
Okay.
Researchers are developing systems where amputees can control their prosthetics using sound. Imagine humming a tune and your prosthetic hand responds to the pitch and rhythm, mimicking the movements of a real hand.
Wow, that's incredible. It's like music becoming a language for our bodies to communicate with technology.
Exactly. And it's not just prosthetics. Researchers are exploring how sound can be used to control robots, drones, even smart home devices. Imagine using voice commands to control your lights, adjust the thermostat, or even compose music, all through a sonified interface.
It's like the world is becoming one giant soundboard and we're all DJs. But it's not just about practicality and efficiency, right? The sources also mention some really interesting artistic applications of sound as input.
Absolutely. Artists are using sound to create immersive installations and interactive performances. Imagine walking into a room where your voice triggers visual projections, or where your movements create ever-changing soundscapes.
It's like stepping inside a work of art where your senses are fully immersed in the experience.
Exactly. Sound as input allows artists to break down the barriers between the audience and the artwork, creating a truly participatory and personalized experience.
So we've gone from turning data into sound to using sound to control data. It's like sonification has opened up a whole new dimension of possibilities. But if we step back and look at the bigger picture, what does this all mean? What's the takeaway for our listeners?
For me, the key takeaway is this. Sound is more than just something we hear. It's a powerful medium for communication, interaction, and even creation. For centuries, we've privileged sight as our primary sense. But sonification is challenging that paradigm, revealing the hidden potential of sound to convey information, evoke emotions, and shape our world.
It's like we're finally waking up to the symphony of data that surrounds us, tuning in to the subtle frequencies that shape our lives in ways we never imagined.
Precisely. And as we continue to explore the possibilities of sonification, We're not just discovering new ways to listen to data. We're discovering new ways to listen to the world and to ourselves.
That's a beautiful way to put it. It's a reminder that we live in a world of sound, a sonic tapestry woven from the hum of machines, the rustle of leaves, the murmur of voices, and the countless other sounds that make up our sonic landscape. Sonification invites us to listen more deeply, to tune in to those subtle frequencies, and to discover the hidden stories they have to tell.
And who knows what we might find when we open our ears and start listening.
Well said. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the captivating world of sonification. We hope you'll keep exploring the power of sound and its potential to transform the way we understand and interact with the world around us.